So there was a lady who lived in Washington, D.C., and she was pregnant, and she was in a pretty bad car accident, and she was knocked unconscious as a result of the accident. And so they rushed her to the hospital, and actually when she got to the hospital, she went into labor while she was still unconscious, and she gave birth to twins, a boy and a little girl. And she woke up 3 days later and immediately realized she was no longer pregnant, and so she frantically asked the nurse, "What happened? What happened?" And so they call the doctor in, and the doctor comes in, and he says, "Well, ma'am, congratulations, you gave birth to twins, a boy and a girl." And the doctor said, "Because your husband is out of the country and we could not reach him and you were unconscious, we allowed your brother to name the children since he was the first one to the hospital." And she thought, "Oh no, not my brother. He's just not very bright." And so she asked the doctor, she said, "Okay, well, what he named the little girl?" And he said, "Well, he named the little girl Denise." She said, "Oh, wow, I actually like that name. That's pretty good. What he named the little boy?" And the doctor said, "He named the little boy the nephew." So there you go. Come on, come on, wake up now. It's like 9:30 by now, 9:40. You're with me, aren't you? So names are pretty important, right? We love hearing people say our name. It actually brings us, studies have shown that when people say our name, it brings us comfort. It makes us feel valuable and important. So this week, as I was preparing this lesson called Naming Rights, I thought, you know, I'm going to find out, why do I have the name that I have? I thought maybe I have this really deep meaning behind my name, my first name being Eric, my middle name being Jonathan. And so I actually texted my mother this week and I said, "Hey, random question. How did you and Dad come up with my name?" And she said, "Well, we both like the name Eric and Jonathan." I thought, okay, so there's no crazy story behind, you know, crazy relative or really important person they decided to name me after. That's okay. She said, "We both really like both of those names, but we thought you were too small to call you Jonathan." I just don't know how to take that. I've been thinking about it all week. I talked to Haley about it. I just really don't know what to do with that. Did I ever grow into the name Jonathan? I think I look like an Eric. I like my name. I'm fine with it. Some people don't like their name, and sometimes they have pretty good reason. So there's this situation in 1 Samuel 4. This isn't our primary text for the day, but this is one of the craziest stories in all the Bible to me, because Eli, who was the high priest at the time, had two sons who were pretty wicked, Hophni and Phinehas, and God calls judgment on them, and they are actually all killed on the same day. And here's where we pick up in 1 Samuel 4. It said that his daughter-in-law, the wife of Phinehas, was pregnant and near the time of delivery. When she heard the news that the ark of God had been captured, that her father-in-law and her husband was dead, she went into labor and gave birth, but was overcome by the labor pains. And as she was dying, the woman attending her said, "Don't despair, you've given birth to a son." That was a reason to rejoice. But she didn't respond or pay any attention. She named the boy Ichabod, saying, "The glory has departed from Israel because the ark of God has been captured and because of the death of her father-in-law and her husband." So how'd you like to have that name that everywhere you go when you're sitting in kindergarten and they call roll and they say, "Ichabod, oh, you're the kid that's here to remind us of the day that we lost, the ark of God was captured and all these people died." So if you thought your name was bad, remember, it could always be worse. You could remind people of the worst tragedy in our nation's history. To my knowledge, none of us here have any of those names. So let's keep going. So today I want us to talk about this interesting situation in Genesis chapter 35 that involves a name, a naming of a son. And this situation involves two important people in Israel's history named Jacob and his wife Rachel. So let's read a little bit in Genesis 35, starting in verse 16. "So they moved on from Bethel, and while they were still some distance from Ephrath, Rachel began to give birth and had great difficulty." I've never known a woman who hasn't had difficulty in childbirth. Can you tell a man wrote the book of Genesis? Ladies, can you tell? Isn't that the understatement of the year? All the moms are in their minds saying, "Amen." Who went through childbirth that did not have difficulty? I'm pretty sure God was actually the reason why that happened, right? As he caused difficulty to come upon childbirth for Adam and Eve's sin. So anyway, sometimes I just read the Bible and I'm just like, wow, that's a pretty obvious statement. I've never seen a smooth childbirth process. So as she was having great difficulty, in childbirth, the midwife said to her, "Don't be afraid, for you have another son." And as she breathed her last, for she was dying, she named her son Ben-Oni. But his father named him Benjamin. So Rachel died and was buried on the way to Ephrath, that is, Bethlehem. Over her tomb, Jacob set up a pillar, and to this day, that pillar marks Rachel's tomb. Now, these two had a very unique relationship. Let's backtrack a little bit in the book of Genesis. Do you remember when Jacob meets Rachel? He thinks she's the most beautiful woman he's ever laid eyes on. And he goes to her father and he says, "I want to marry your daughter, Rachel. What do I have to do?" And her father says, "Well, you're going to have to work for me for 7 years." He said, "Fine, I'll do it." And he gets to work. And at the end of 7 years, he says, "Look, I've been working for you long enough. I'm ready to marry Rachel." So they go through this marriage ceremony. The only problem is, on the wedding night, her dad sends Leah in, not Rachel, and pulls a switcheroo on him. And he's like, "Great, now I married the wrong woman. What do I got to do to marry Rachel?" And he says, "You got to work 7 more years. So he works 14 years to marry this woman. I'd work 14 years to marry my wife. I know I'm the only man in here that would ever do that, honey. See, nobody's raising their hand. Take note, right? So Jacob works 14 years to marry Rachel. And at some point, she wants a son. And we know her firstborn son was named Joseph. Pretty important guy, hated by all of his siblings. But after Joseph is born, she prays to God, "Lord, please give me another son." And this is the story of the birth of her second son. Now, I do find it interesting that it says that Rachel began to have great difficulty. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but I'm just curious if anyone that's here today has been going through or dealing with any kind of great difficulty in life. Maybe it's been some financial difficulty. Maybe it's been some difficulty in your marriage. Maybe you've had some problems with your children. Maybe you've had a loved one that's been sick, or you've been battling some kind of illness. Maybe there's been some trouble at work or trouble at school that you're dealing with, or business isn't going well. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but you can just nod in your heart if that fits you. And if it doesn't, it's coming, right? Because all throughout life, we deal with difficulty. Because life never goes according to plan. I've never met an individual whose life has gone exactly how they planned it. There's always some turns and some detours, and there's always some major situations that just rock us to our core. And here for Rachel, life has not gone the way she thought it would. She thought she would marry a great man, which she did, and she thought she would have all these children and give him all these sons, which she wasn't able to. It took her a long time just to give him one son, and now here she is, finally able to give birth to another son for her husband, and now it's going to cost her her life. And it just reminds me of a very powerful truth that wherever there is triumph, there is usually trouble. I think this is so easily seen in the sports world. There's never a championship team that at some point in the season doesn't deal with some kind of adversity. Maybe it's they lose a game, or maybe they lose one of their important players, or they almost lose a game, and it's just a major moment of struggle for them that ultimately pushes them on to triumph. Another interesting thing you can do is you can look at some of the most successful people in the world, and almost every one of them at some point had a business fail or went bankrupt, and some of them filed bankruptcy multiple times, and now they're some of the most successful people in the world. In most degrees that you earn, there is usually a little bit of struggle on the way to achieving the degree. I said most degrees, not all of them are that way. But most of them, there's going to be some type of struggle before you can achieve the triumph. And God never promised that life would all be good. Now, we're pretty good at making people think it is, right? We come, we show up, we put smiles on. "How you doing?" "Good, fine, everything's great." And it may not be. It might be terrible. And it's never all good. Even if some parts of your life are going great, there's probably another aspect of your life that's not going so great. It's never perfect. It's never all good. But God never promised that it would be. Here was His promise in Romans 8:28. We know that in all things God works for the good of those who love Him. It doesn't say that He's going to make everything good. It says that He's going to bring about good out of everything, even the worst of situations. So in Genesis 29 and 30, Rachel and her sister wife Leah are going through this baby-bearing battle. And it's really interesting because both of them are trying to win the approval of their husband over who can give Jacob the most sons. And Leah is totally dominating this game. I mean, she is just giving him son after son after son. And Rachel can't seem to get pregnant, and she's frustrated. And finally, that moment happens where she realizes she's pregnant, and she gives birth to Joseph, and it's such a big deal to her. And then in that moment, she prays, and then years and years and years go by, and there's this answerless prayer, this unanswered prayer that she's had for so long, Lord, just give me another son. And then finally, again, she gets pregnant. And just imagine her joy. She's going to have another son. But this birth process doesn't go like she thought. And at some point, things take a turn for the worse. Some of you will remember when the men were not allowed in the delivery room. I'm not going to make a comment on that as to what I feel about that. Let's just say sometimes they're called the good old days for a reason, right? So you remember where some of you, where the men were not allowed in, and so you would sit in the waiting room with all of your other family and friends and your wife and the nurses, and maybe her mother would be in the delivery room, and you're in the waiting room, and they're all talking about, hey, what are you going to name it? Is it going to be a little boy? Is it going to be a little girl? You know, before you knew everything by like week 7, right? So you're sitting in the delivery room, or in the waiting room, and let's imagine Jacob just for a moment that he's sitting out in the waiting room, and some of his family members are there, and maybe his other son Joseph is there, and he's just waiting for the midwife to come in and to give him the good news. And obviously he can hear everything that's going on. He can hear the screaming, he can hear the crying, he can hear the craziness that's going on in the delivery room. And at some point, the midwife walks out holding this little boy. And she says, Jacob, this is your son. But I've got bad news. Rachel didn't make it. And immediately, Jacob is just overcome with grief. How much he loved this woman. 14 years he worked to marry her and loved every minute of it. And now he's holding this son. And the midwife says, with her dying breath, she gave him a name. Now, it's every parent's right to name their child, right? Some parents like to have a little fun when they name their children. So I want you to see if you can guess how the name that's going to come up on the screen. If you had to take a guess, how would you pronounce that name? Go ahead and say it. Huh? Leia? No. Now, I checked this out on Snopes.com. It's not credible. There's been some reports that people have named their children this. It's actually pronounced LaDasha. LaDasha, yeah. Yeah. Now, on the bright side, you get into kindergarten, man, that's a breeze to spell, you know what I mean? Imagine getting the name Methuselah or, you know, something like that. So this is actually pretty simple to spell. Now, I don't know if that's totally credible, but I do find that a little humorous. But I remember when we were going through the naming process with our two little girls, Haley actually came into our marriage with a name picked out if we had a daughter first. She had a name she really wanted. I didn't mind it. I liked it. Kinley Elizabeth. It fit. She liked the name Kinley Elizabeth being in memory of her grandmother. So I was good with that. Loved that name. So when we got pregnant again, I said, all right, it's my turn. I get to pick. And I love Eric Clapton. I love Eric Clapton, and that's actually where Layla's name came from. And she will know that as she grows up, that she was named after one of the greatest songs of all time, that being Layla. And her middle name is Grace, and I just told Haley, I said, if you don't like Layla, I just ask that we use the name Grace somehow. I just want her to be reminded, and every time we to be reminded, of how much God loves us and of how powerful His grace is in our life. And that's honestly where Layla Grace came from. And that was our right to pick out their names. And it was a lot of fun going through all the different names and seeing what all was popular. You know, what's interesting is between like 1982 and 1990, everybody thought that if they named their son Chris, he'd be the only one in class named Christopher. And then they all get in kindergarten, and they call roll, and they say, Eric, I'm the only one that raised my hands. Then they say, Christopher, and like seven kids' hands go up. And it was a unique name that was no longer unique. And same with Kinley. We thought Kinley was a unique name, and it was like 2 years later, we saw like seven kids running around with the name Kinley. So apparently we all look at the same websites, right? So going back to Genesis chapter 35, with her dying breath, Rachel says, name him Ben-Oni. Ben means son. Oni is an interesting word. It actually has two meanings. It could either mean sorrow or strength. So she's either saying, name him Ben, son of Oni, my sorrow. And that makes total sense, right? She knows she is about to lose her life. And so she says, name him son of my sorrow. She'll never get to hold him. She'll never get to bandage his boo-boos. She'll never get to watch him get married or to grow up or to do great things in life. And certainly that was something that was bringing her tremendous sorrow. Name him son of my sorrow. Or she could have been saying, name him son of my strength. Maybe he was that promised child that just kind of kept her going. She just couldn't wait for that moment for him to come. But regardless of which one it means, most people tend to think that it means son of my sorrow. Regardless of which one it means, I think there's an important truth that can be pointed out here, that when great strength is born out of sorrow, great strength is born out of sorrow. Some of the strongest people I know, some of you are in this room right now, have dealt with some of the most difficult situations imaginable. Think about Isaiah chapter 53, talking about Jesus. Says that he was a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And when we talk about some of the strongest people, not physically strong, but emotionally, spiritually, psychologically strong, Jesus is one of the ones that comes to mind. And he's described as a man of sorrows. And so where there is sorrow, it's usually born out of, or where there is great strength, it's usually born out of some type of sorrow. And that's what James is sort of getting to, where Jonathan read in James chapter 1, consider it pure joy. Now, there are things in life that I consider pure joy. Holding my children, especially when they were little babies. You know, isn't that such a joyous occasion? Riding any roller coaster, eating key lime pie. I find joy in a lot of things. James' definition of joy is a little bit different. He says, consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds. And this is not like some kind of sadistic humor. He really has a greater reason of how we can find joy in difficult situations, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance, and perseverance must finish its work so that you may be complete and mature. So we can find joy in the most difficult of circumstances because we see the end game. That it's not God necessarily causing this difficulty, but of what God's going to do with it. That God's going to bring me great strength. He's going to mature my faith. He's going to make me complete as I persevere, as I endure. And I think another word that we could put sometimes is as I just simply survive this. Sometimes you just survive certain situations, don't you? But it's bringing you strength. God is using that to strengthen your faith, to strengthen your trust in Him as you persevere, as you push through that minute after minute, hour after hour, day after day, year after year. But here's what's interesting about Genesis 35. They bring the baby to Jacob. And they tell him, good news, bad news. You got a son, but you lost your wife today. And with her dying breath, she wanted the son to be called Ben-Oni. And Jacob, it just says, then Jacob named him Benjamin. That's interesting to me. In this day and time, the father actually had the right to name the child. Now, the mother could suggest a name, but the father basically had the trump card. He had the sign off on what the child's name would be. And so, when they bring this child to Jacob, and they say, Rachel, with her dying breath, wants him to be called Ben-Oni, son of my suffering, Jacob basically ignores her dying request and says, no, he's going to be called Benjamin. Ben being son of Jamin, meaning of my right hand, son of my right hand. Now you backtrack into Jacob's life, and the right hand is the hand of blessing. When a father would be lying on his deathbed and would bless his sons, would pass down that blessing to his firstborn and to all of his other sons, a blessing to continue on with the family name, a blessing of that inheritance, the right hand would have grabbed right hands and he would have blessed him. And Jacob says, no, we're going to call him son of my right hand, son of my blessing. Man, this is powerful stuff. He says, I don't want him called son of my sorrow. I want him called son of my blessing. Now keep in mind the news that Jacob has just learned. His wife has just died. But he looks at this son and he says, I will not call this situation sorrowful. I'm going to call it a blessing. What other people called a curse, Jacob called a blessing. He renamed it. He looked at the situation that others called sorrowful and a curse. Jacob says, no, no, no. We're going to call this a blessing. And every time someone says my son's name, they will not be reminded of his mother's death. They'll be reminded of the blessing that he is and that she was. Son of my blessing. He renamed his sorrow a blessing. And I think we can too. Whatever situations we're dealing with, whatever it is that's causing us difficulty in life, we have the opportunity to rename it. To rename that struggle a blessing. To rename that sorrow a strength. To rename that failure an opportunity. To rename that hardship a chance to persevere. So in 2009, November 2009, my family dealt with the greatest sorrow and hardship it had ever faced. Many of you might remember that situation. My brother and sister-in-law were in a car accident. My little niece, Helen, passed away as a result of that car accident at almost 3 years old. And our family, up until that point, had not dealt with much tragedy, honestly. We didn't know what to do. And looking at the situation, it was awful. Especially for my brother and sister-in-law and my parents, for all of us, but especially for them. Awful. Felt like a curse. Sometimes you could look at that and you could say, God, why did you allow that to happen? Why did you cause that to happen? And that's just our grief speaking to God. He didn't cause it. But it happened. And over the last several years, at least for me, I've been able to rename that event. While it was awful and one of the darkest moments in our lives as a family, me personally, God has used that event to bring about some pretty cool things. First thing was, man, there were a lot of people that prayed. A lot of people. Thousands of people, actually, that prayed for my family. People who said they had not prayed in a long time. We're praying. That's God working. Okay. Second thing is, our family had kind of scattered. We lived away. My brother lived away. My sister lived close. But we didn't spend a whole lot of time together. And it brought us together. And since then, we've tried to make it a point to get together more often. Went on our first family vacation this past year in a long time. And that was all as a result of the last several years. That's a God thing. And here's another one. 3 weeks later, Kinley was born. So where my family experienced its greatest sorrow, it also experienced another gain. Where there is struggle, there is triumph. And I don't know that that's how it was all supposed to work out, but it was just interesting the timing that in our midst of grieving, God brought about a little bit of hope. And the healing that that situation and her birth brought to our family. Now, I know not everybody gets to go through things like that, where you have such a tragic situation and then you have such a hopeful situation. But over time, when you're able to step back and look at that situation, whatever it is that's caused great difficulty, Usually you can look and see how God has brought about some major growth in your life. How He's used that as an opportunity to strengthen you. Whether it's because you drew closer to Him or because you simply just endured it and got through it. He's used that to strengthen you. And maybe He's worked about some other things that when you look at it a little deeper and you peel back just the surface level, you can see where He's done some even greater things in that moment. And because of that, you can look at that situation and you can rename it. It's no longer a curse, but there are blessings that come from it. And that's the power that God gives us. So in Genesis 35 and verse 21, here's what it says. Israel moved on again and pitched his tent beyond Migdol Eder. Jacob's name, a few chapters before, was renamed to Israel. And what's interesting is that while it refers to that nation of people that kept moving, it's also referring to that man who dealt with such tragedy and sorrow. And notice it doesn't say he moved on and was perfectly fine and never worried about it again. It says he moved on. And I think that speaks power to us. That we deal with a difficult situation. We see how God uses it. We rename it. And then we can move on. We still have the scars. We still have the hurts. But we see the greater picture here. We see how God has not left us. How He has not forsaken us. How He has used that situation for something even greater. And we can rename it. And we can keep pressing on in life. He called his sorrow a blessing, and he kept going. So today, what are you holding on to that you need to rename a blessing and move on? What difficult situations do you have that you've been holding on to that God's calling you? Let's rename that today. Let's see the blessings from it. Let's see the good out of it. Let's rename it. Keep going. If we can help you in any way, whether you need the prayers of this church, a hug, some encouragement, man, we'd love to offer you some strength and some support today. If you want to put Christ on in baptism so that you can have God bring about good from difficult situations in your life, and you want to give your life to Him and trust Him and live for Him so that you can call those kinds of situations blessings instead of cursings. We'd love to help you in that as well. If you need some encouragement, if you want to be baptized this morning, won't you come as we stand and sing?